Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Welcome.
You're on the air. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Yes. How are you there, sir?
I'm okay. And you?
I'm cool. A couple of weeks ago, the Auditor General's report was the fair of the month. And I wanted to speak to it, but somehow I find it very difficult getting to the call-in program. Almost, I thought I was a dancehall artist trying to get a visa to the United States.
Right.
But I don't think I want to pursue that issue now, because what happened after I realized that, you know, it just petered out. But I want to discuss crime, Mr. Ellison. If you remember my voice, this is not the first time I will be dealing with crime. Because I think it is critical that we raise the profile of crime again in Barbados. We're having too many shootings, we're having too many bodies being discovered, and nobody seems to be addressing the issue. A couple of months ago, some people in the society felt that the media, most likely the print media, were putting crime on the front pages too much. And somehow that seemed to have knocked the whole issue of crime off the table. It is ironic that during this curfew time, there were so many instances of gun crime and murders that I wonder if we were not under curfew, what would be the outcome at this
point? How many did you count?
Mr. Ellis,
there were so many.
There were 17 murders for the year, about 70, 20. I could be corrected, but the numbers are not under 17. And the last cruel and drastic one was the triple murder. Mm-hmm. And then we had, just a couple of days ago, we found somebody in a dump somewhere in St. George. Also, there were two incidents where two guys were shot while they were sitting down in their verandas during the curfew time. And then a couple days ago, somewhere in Pioneer Road or somewhere on that side, there was a murder and there was also a gun-related crime. So there's enough evidence out there to show that crime, and especially gun crime, was really very rampant. And we have not heard anything about this crime. And the crime that we are experiencing is not who we are. We have to address the issue of crime. I'm not making a political statement. I agree with the Prime Minister in terms of what she's saying recently about the bandwagon. I agree with the BOSS program. You know, I don't like the term, but I agree with it because I always believe that Barbadians should have a sense of investment. But we have to address crime, because the same investment that we want to attract Barbadians to, that can easily be obliterated, like how COVID-19 obliterated the whole economy. I was listening to a blogger somewhere, and he blogs from Japan, and 100% of black people who are living in Japan, when he asked them what were their impressions of Japan, all of them said safety. These were black people who came from America, from Nigeria, from London, from wherever. And they were impressed with the safety of Japan, and they were saying they could walk both in Japan any time of the morning, quite unlike what they can do back in the countries. And one person who said, what concerned me is one person said in the Caribbean too, that they're concerned about the Caribbean. Mr. Ellison, I'm going to refer you to something you said to that articulate young lady some time ago, who was speaking about the same follow-up from the Auditor General's report. I really was impressed with her delivery. And this is what you said to her. I think we need to take some kind of guidance from what is happening in the United States today. And it is, if you allow certain problems to fester, then one day something happens, something that on the face of it was not considered to be a big thing, but it is a straw that breaks the camel's back, in that it made people stand up and say enough is enough. Those were your words. I wrote them down because I was impressed with them. As a matter of fact, you do say some nuggets that I really am impressed with. And I would hope that the media, especially the electronic media, because I think that the print media is doing a good job until people said they were not doing in terms of crime. I would like the print, the electronic media to really do something about bringing back focus to the crime situation in Barbados, because it is happening, we are not reporting it, and until we speak out of it, it's going to fester and fester until we have to stand up.
Well, let me say to you that I don't agree that it is not being reported. Perhaps your concern really is how it is reported. Sometimes it may not get the front page splash that you're looking for, or it wouldn't be the breaking news story, or it may not be the lead story. But these stories are being reported. What may be missing in your judgment is the follow-up to speak a bit more about how many of them have occurred in the period and to what extent it has created a sense of fear and concern in communities. But even here on this program, I've heard other callers raise the concern that you have raised. So to that extent, I don't agree that the media is involved in any program that really covers it up. And there is indeed a lot of concern about the fact that it would have occurred right in the emergency. It raises all types of questions about, you know, how effective has this emergency been in trying to control some of the behavior that we were worried about in the community. I remember we saw pictures of police licking down tables and benches and makeshift tables and benches that people were using to congregate in communities. After a while, that seemed to stop. And, you know, some of the people have found themselves out there liming and that sort of thing. And out of those groups, we have had some incidents. Barbados must worry about it, because I haven't kept track of exactly what the numbers are. And I will go with your 17 to 20 or so. One makes a comparison with what obtained last year, I think we are behind what we had last year. But between 17 and 20, in all the circumstances, is still a matter for us to worry about. And we are not getting the kind of analysis, sir, that you would see apply to the discussion about Black Lives Matter in the United States. What are the factors that have so many young males in this society snuffing out each other's lives this way? To what extent is that related to our socialization? Because we got to go back to the motivating factors. To what extent is it born out of some of the very economic structures that we have been talking about, that we've been complaining about? That analysis is missing, and we believe, some of us, that the way to deal with this is once you get guns off the streets, you're going to deal with the problem. This is far more complex, and it is unfortunate. Does it tell you that I believe that Barbados is involved in too many distractions, that the real some of the things that we are discussing here today are linked to this sense of hopelessness and marginalization and anger that exists within the community? Are we prepared to deal with it? I don't think so, because to a large extent, this society likes it so, the classism, the fact that we are able to say, you know, one person is better than the next. But I've always said, and you've heard me say this, if you don't address these issues, then it becomes unsafe for all of us.
And then just a point here, just one point of clarity, because I'm saying that the print media before used to highlight the murders, but then there were people in the society who felt that it was at least sensationalizing the murders or the crime, and they still want to have a perfect society, and because the crime is not on the front pages of the society, it is not being discussed on a wider level, and therefore it is happening, but it's like the underbelly that is sort of rotting.
Well, this is so, where the dilemma is for the journalists and the people who edit, because they have to deal with those people who say you're sensationalizing or you're trying to sell newspapers and that sort of thing. And then there's another section that says, but if this is happening in the society and you do not give it prominence, you are likely to aid and abet those in society who are continuing to behave like that. And therefore, because our society tends to be crisis-driven, we tend not to respond to things until, you know, you reach that point, you're going to find that we are just going to ignore it. And especially the political directorate will basically say, well, you know, it is the squeaky engine that gets the oil. So this is the dilemma facing those who make those decisions. One editor says, you know what? We need to make this a priority issue, because if we don't put it there, this is going to continue and it will be ignored. The other then starts to worry about what the political directorate is going to say. Because there are a lot of people who remain fearful that the political directorate will react in a manner that you do not want them to react when you do something like that.
If I may, yes. And I would hope, though, that the political directorate really address the issue, because we don't want to, as you said, wait until it festers and festers, and then you realize that it's busting your face. Can I have a comment on this Black Lives Matter thing?
Sure.
Right, in relation, with reference to Barbados. Now, I sympathize with all what is happening in the United States. But I feel the United States, the people in the United States, the black people in the United States can solve their own problems. They proved that they can make a difference in the 60s when the icons held hands, the Harry Belafontes, the Sidney Poitiers, the whoever at that time, who were the leading lights in the black culture. They held hands and they saw some change in terms of impacting on the political directorate. In America, unfortunately, over the years, those same icons in the entertainment industry and the sport industry seem to have been distracted with material things, and therefore they lost their way. The only way that America can redress this problem of black on at least the police systemic activity, racism, is if the Serena Williamses, the Venuses, the Oprah Winfreys, the Roc Nations, the P. Diddy's, whoever they are, come out and go literally on the street and let the average American see that they have somebody that they look up to who is willing to carry the fight to them, to this systemic racism. Don't hide behind a social media, Instagram, and Michael Jordan talking about he's going to give $100 million over 10 years. You know, he's the IMF. Oh, but come back now to the Barbados angle. The Mr. Denny, I'll give him his handle. He is advocating about Black Lives Matter in America. And if I can say it, I don't believe that it is genuinely, I should say his organization is genuinely against any black, well, for any black lives. I think they're against America, period. Because over the past couple of months, there were black people in Wuhan, China. There is the situation in Lusaka, Zambia, at this particular moment, where the Chinese are controlling even the mayors. I think I had made reference to something where there's a YouTube video going around where a mayor who thought that he was protecting the interests of the Zambians, he was made to apologize publicly. I'm challenging the Mr. Denny's organization to go and see if he can agitate, I'm going to use my words very carefully, agitate the Chinese embassy to change their attitude to black people. So if he believes in Black Lives Matter, not only restrict it to the United States, but also restrict, embrace the black lives in China, who are undergoing some serious problems up there, and then I would have confidence in him. So I agree with the Prime Minister that it is the bandwagon. Don't jump on the bandwagon. Look at it globally. And by extension, I agree with the Prime Minister also. We have to be able as a people to deal with certain things that can empower ourselves so that we can then walk with our heads held high anywhere in the world as black people. And don't wait until something happens that we're just going to get up hot and sweaty and decide to push our fist in the air and raise placards.
Right, so it is not just based upon the spontaneous reaction to something.
Right.
But it is about a strategic approach to trying to dismantle what are seen as the structures that support this kind of environment. And I say to you, it begins with money. It begins with money.
Well, that's another subject.
All right? And if you don't have money, nobody listens to you. And therefore, we need to begin there. Not by looking at it from the point of view of extracting from those who have it and pulling them down and that sort of thing. But asking the question, how can we reform these structures so that more people are able to get there and see themselves as having the potential to become influential in that regard? That's part of the reason why this construct with the commercial banking sector in Barbados cannot be ignored. It is at the center of where we are right now. The two issues that, as far as I'm concerned, are central to this.
Mr. Ellis, indulge me for 1 second. I don't have to bring my personal things on the ring. But years ago, I went into a bank in Barbados. I wanted to get something. And I had to go to a white loans officer. He asked me 1,001 questions. I don't know what Ellis was going to ask me until I look across the room and I saw a black loans officer. And he said, come. I'm going to loan you the money. I never forgot that man. I want to call his name on the, I won't call his full name, but his name was Mr. Phillips. And he loaned me that money. I never, ever again blame black people for not doing good things to black people. We are all together. And yes, there's some scoundrels and whatnot. But as somebody was speaking to, I think, Dennis Johnson the other day, who said that there are a number of black people out there who help black people. So if we can get that message out that there are black people, we live in a 95% black people, and I'm sure there are people who are helping people. If we can get that message out, is the messaging that we have to get out there that we can help ourselves. So that when we go into the bank will lend us money because they will know that we are together. You understand? And it is critical, it's very critical. Branker, Miss that thing down Fontebelle, I heard Mr. Branker lament over the years that he goes in the bank and he doesn't get any money. The bank does not help the small business, black businesses, and he's supposed to be a respected man.
But so there was a time, you know, when there was more power in the hands of the people who work in the banks here. Mm-hmm. Today, that power has been taken from them. The flexibility that people will tell you that bankers, local bankers, had back then, that flexibility is gone. You have to get your permission from head office.
True.
And therefore, we have to talk about, if you are serious about saying that they need to take their knees off of our necks, you have to go beyond the experience of what George Floyd had on the street. And you have to look figuratively at how this system is constructed to keep people in that situation. The same thing, we've had a similar situation, for instance, with respect to shareholding in Barbados. You think it's by accident that the stock exchange is almost dead? It is not by accident, because the experience of people over the years has been such that they feel as though you invest in places and you don't get power. So these are the things that, for me, I would suggest to you that it is the economic power.
I agree.
That matters more than anything else in this country. Part of it is what the government is able to do and the contracts that it gives out. But the other part of this is how we, as a people, identify the issues and work around those issues. Sure.
I think that we have to look at our history, because I also heard you, and you might realize by now I listen, when you spoke about the Tulsa massacre. At one time, black people were willing to put their investments together and make a difference.
The Black Wall Street.
Black Wall Street. I think it is time. We got to keep up the noise now. It is about time that we do that, because there's just as much dissension in the white community, in the Indian community, as people perceive it is in the black community. So the blacks now have to say, look, they do their own thing, we are going to do ours, and see if we can get another Black Wall Street somewhere, and let us move forward. Because the only can, and then again, I think that black people need to tell their stories. They got too many black people in Barbados, they got a lot of money, and they don't want to tell anybody they got money. So therefore, if the average man who's sitting on the block, well, that's a bad example, but if the average man who's walking the street realizes that the black man that is driving the vehicle has a story to tell, that young black man would be able to have somebody to look up to.
Okay.
So that's it, Mrs. Alice.
Thank you very much for your call. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You on the air?
Hello.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Yeah, this is Israel. Yeah, this is the PSV operator that called a couple of days ago. Yes, I want to speak about those dead ends I see on the road picking up passengers. Right? There's a lot on the road picking up passengers. I know Transport Board have the top program with them. Transport Board still have the top program with the others that are. So these dead ends now not need to work the port and stuff, right? No, on the road. And out there, you're making the money out there.
But don't you need them? Given
we don't need them. They need to go.
But given given the need for this physical distancing and stuff, you don't think it's important to have more numbers?
No, it is not important, Carla. We have enough. The route is overcrowded. Before those was even there, before the COVID, the route was overcrowded. Yes, it was published all over. For months and months, the roads was overcrowded with permits. They even tried to open new roads. And now COVID come, right? They brought the top forum was there. I know they brought the ZMs there, right? I know what asked me is, when you're on a road driving, you come in to pick up your regular customers in my old PSV van, you know? They all standing here, gee-gee. When you look around, a brand new ZM, air conditioning, everything. Got to sign the part again, and the people bong again in that day. You know, people say?
What?
Man, that van new ain't going AC.
That's the only reason to get in?
That's what the people doing.
What about the conduct and behavior of the traditional ZR driver ZR conductor?
That conduct will be there to the government dealt with it, and we know about that.
All right.
But I talk about these ZMs need to move, right? Someone told me that the ZMs is only there temporarily, but this is a lot of pressure on the...
Well, since the government decides that we are going back to business as usual, one missing element in all of this is what is going to be the position with those vehicles that were integrated into the public transportation system. Is that something that will remain, or are we going
remain.
To revert?
It better not remain.
Okay.
It better call. I can't take up my ZR. I gonna buy port gate. I say again, pick up tourists to do a 3-hour tour. We can't do that. They gonna know if we mad. We can't do that thing. We want to know if we mad. We's going to pay more insurance and more road tax than them. We can't get duty free. Then got less insurance, less road tax, and then getting duty free.
I'd like so the people who travel by... I really wish that some of the people who travel by these vehicles could call and say whether there's any...
The passenger should never be getting in them.
I would like them to... The passenger is key. The passenger is the most important person in all of this. And I want them to share with the public how they feel about it. Because you all hold these people hostage otherwise.
In what way?
With respect to the way that you treat them. You know how badly you all treat people?
Not all.
But a large number of you treat the traveling public with utter disrespect.
Yes, it is true, and the government can do something about it. But what
about it? And you know what? The government needs to hold this over your heads.
Yeah, for what?
This whole situation of having these other people come into the picture until whenever the tourism comes back. So that you are taught a lesson about how, you know, what is required of you all. You know how many people are infuriated by the fact that for year after year, day after day, people complain about your treatment and nothing happens because you feel that you're in a dominant position. You can care less.
Something can happen. It's just that the courts and the government is not doing anything about it.
They hear you.
In the treasury. You know they're putting money in the treasury.
I hear you.
What happened with those vehicles in Antigua and St. Lucia? Everything in order. Things could be in order in Barbados too. They travel this whole Caribbean. They have friends that own vehicles.
Well, I think finally something has happened to wake you all up. Tell you the truth. This country has tried some everything and nothing woke you up. But COVID comes and it forces a situation upon us. So finally, something is happening that says, look, this is unacceptable.
So it's speed up here for power?
Yes. Because, I mean, in the context of the traveling public, I tell you that the traveling passenger is the most important person in all of this.
Yeah.
How many times Peter has been paying for Paul out there?
Long time.
But you're part of the system.
Yeah.
You're part of the system.
And it could be fixed very easily, very threatened. But the real people that got friends in certain areas that really doing real nonsense.
Would you suggest that the country addresses that?
Owner driven.
It has to be owner driven?
Yes, I mentioned it with a good couple of colleagues of mine. Some of them even said, nah. Some people need money. I say, well, on the driver, put things in place that when you drive your van, you will know you have responsibility, but sometimes that's not going to happen. Because some people drive owners, I see owners, they drive their own van and do a lot of ridiculous stuff.
I just want you to know that in my sense of it all, is that you all don't get any sympathy from the public because of the way that you treat the public. You know, even the good ones among you, we'll find that, you know, people are still going to be negative because too many of the people who are operating in that area are treating people badly.
Yeah. You ever hear the term, you scratch my back?
Well, I hope so. But I hope you all practice that.
The public better know that when if things go back to normal, whatever, right, and the new vans, the air-conditioned vans, you know, soft seat vans, sweet, you know, gone. They got back the normal old vans now, and you want to drop through your gap, or you want a van pick you up. You want a van work later, so you could get home, and your man said, nope, when you're working later, he done it work early.
That assumes that he has enough money in his pocket. That means he's been doing very well.
Doing very well out there. Nah, man. Who scratch me back? We scratch them back. But something got to be done about, the reckless driving. And when they can't put these headings, they saw them, we can't ask somebody. It's mere nonsense. Three or four.
You know what it's called? Competition.
That's not competition. That's nonsense.
All right.
If the roads was overflowed from the beginning, that like you got a bucket that got water coming over, and you ain't catch another bucket. to throw that water.
I want to hear from the people who use these vehicles and use yours. If they can tell us, perhaps next week, what is the difference, if there is any difference. All right? Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
You okay?
Yes.
I got 2 points I want to put to you. You could remember, we know seconds on Trinidad here with COVID and how good we treat them. I want to hear the Trinidadian lady talk about that. And my another point is, we deal with a lot of black. No, I don't like blue lighted people. I think good. But you know about a week ago or two, a black police ambassador gets you. You remember?
Yeah, and?
You efforted the other year around the calling program. You'd be back when the day come. You hear anybody talk about it?
No, because the focus of most people is not on that kind of situation.
No.
They are more looking at it from the point of view of racism and entrenched racism across the world. This is not just a U.S. issue, you know. It's not just a U.S. issue. I was there listening last night to a piece by Malcolm X, and it was an interview that he'd done. I was just trying to find the piece. But basically, in that interview, he spoke about all back then. He spoke about it not in the context of the United States, but the worldwide approach. And we see that. You heard that caller earlier talk about China and stuff. Wherever you are, this is a matter to be confronted.
But Mr. Johnson, we black people, we black people, Bobby's killed with one of them. And this is what Danny Dent should be worried about. We didn't live that for this.
Yeah, you but the question is why?
You point out some peer crying for a child. The black people, Bobby, these are kind of feeling. This kind of, you have a man in New York, Mr. Johnson? Mr. Ellis? That's down in New York. Mm-hmm. And when you go in the house in the areas, when you go up in their buildings, who is the common them? They are black people. And to be frank, you see nonsense that they do.
Okay. So,
They just bring some things up. He said, you know, I don't like to say this black and white thing. I don't like to say that voice started, but it's just, you know. Because people got feeling. And we used to things do to people, and just bring back memories. You got a good day, man.
All right. I got a notice here, Mr. Keshawn Simmons. If you are listening or if someone knows him, he's asked to contact Brighton's Express in Lower Estate because he forgot his wallet there at the office. That's Keshawn Simmons. If you're missing your wallet, you're missing it because you left it at Brighton's Express in Lower Estate. And you can call and ask for David Wood. That's the number for you to call is 431-2646. 431-2646. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon, ma'am.
Now, the gentleman who spoke on crime and violence, I think he made an excellent presentation of my sentiments.
Yes.
And your response shows that you understand the situation. And that's why I want to applaud your station for giving persons the opportunity to express their views and to make suggestions on a wide range of topics. My concern is that in some instances, the ladies and gentlemen who hang out on the block, those who are involved in the gun and other related incidents, even the public servants, credit union members, they're not benefiting from some of the sound opinions offered. I want to say that our young men are angry. They feel disenfranchised, and they're acting out what they feel. My suggestion, sir, is that it would be good if you could take more of your programs away from the studio to some of these groups. For instance, like when you went on Swan Street yesterday, you should have had your microphone. I'm saying go out in the areas and talk to persons to find out what they want and how we can assist them in realizing their dreams. Our young men need to feel that they are respected, that their voices and opinions are heard and acted on. Now, my suggestion to the public servants would be is that they should listen to all of the advantages and disadvantages of the BOSS program and make an informed decision. The questions they should ask and answer are, would I prefer to get 5% on my savings or allow the financial institutions to use my money to get profits for their shareholders? They should ask, why should I be prepared to accept, say, 0.1% on my savings from a bank when I can get 5% on what I have? The other question would be is, what can I purchase with my accumulated savings? Because, you know, we said that these should come out then, you know, where you are accumulating savings so that you would not have to pay excessive higher purchase charges. I don't think persons should continue with this whole notion that they must have things right away. I feel that if they are given the opportunity to accumulate their own money and to spend it on the things that they think, I don't say would need, then it will be, they will be far better off. Now, to the area of the credit union, having heard of all of the savings that have been accumulated, my suggestion is that they should now be amalgamated and that all of the savings, because we do indicate that we as blacks have quite a lot of savings. I think that with the amalgamation, that permission should be granted for them to offer all of the services of a bank. Because right now we have a company in Barbados that they're allowed to issue credit cards. But here it is, our credit unions with a larger number of persons who are at this point members, they are not given the opportunity to become a bank or to offer banking services. It is important that we understand that even, say, in the United States, credit unions are allowed to offer all of the services that a bank can offer. So it would be interesting to see if we can come around, because this is one way of at least giving Barbadians an opportunity to participate in the financial institutions, to get the things that are offered, and to use them for their own benefit. What would you say, Sarah, for such a suggestion, or is this possible?
I think it really needs to be examined not only from the point of view of the credit union movement, but the whole concept of the financial institutions in the country. I've noted, for instance, that we have had the growth of new financial institutions that are presenting themselves as being able to give people cash loans very quickly and that sort of thing. We have to factor the credit union movement's growth into that as well. We have had the Prime Minister talk about crowdfunding. I mean, because we've had COVID, I suppose there's an urgency attached to it, where crowdfunding is now it has had to take a back seat to the idea of the bonds and the solidarity bonds that are coming and that sort of thing. All of this, we need to bring our thinking together. I say that the government on the plus side has to be commended for putting ideas on the table and trying to get feedback from the trade union movement and the private sector and trying to hammer out something. But we've got a lot of work to do in trying to give more people a feeling that they can participate and they can grow. I agree with you, it is not just the young male. If you believe that we have a problem with the young male, trust me, you have a similar problem with the female. Both the young female and the not so young female who has nurtured that young man into being who and what he is. I mean, in many instances, he hears the conversation, he hears the frustration coming first of all from his mother. And therefore, if you believe for 1 minute that we can tackle this on a gender basis only or on a male basis only, I think you make a very big mistake. It's got to be more holistic than that. We have a big problem. And then it comes right back to what you are seeing with the shootings and the uncertainty and the instability and that sort of thing. It begins with the money. And that's where we have to go. Thank you all very much for being involved in today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. And thanks to Dennis Johnson, the technical operator and producer. I am David Ellis. I wish you a great afternoon.